Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Retronauts is part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. For more information, please go to greenlitpodcasts.com.
This week on Retronauts, these games will make you scream. Everybody, welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey. Today's podcast is all about Addams Family Games because it's a spooky Halloween edition of Retronauts. And it's extra spooky if you're listening on the free feed because it's like November. But if you're a patron, you got this on Halloween, the perfect time to talk about Addams Family Games that are mostly bad but still interesting, just like the Addams Family themselves. So 5 years ago, we talked all about Fester's Quest. We had an entire Retronauts Micro about Fester's Quest. That was Retronauts Micro 50. So I figured there's a lot of other Addams Family games around that time, and they're worth talking about. So we're going to be doing that, and there's a surprising amount of them, even though they're mostly related to the two 90s movies. So before I continue, who is with me here today? Who is in the same room with me?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and I've got my shawl on for this.
Exactly. And by the way, it wasn't until I saw the 2019 movie where they have, at the end, they do a CGI recreation of those end credits, but they have a follow a bouncing ball thing with the lyrics. Mm-hmm. I didn't know until this year it was, so get a witch's shawl on, a broomstick you can crawl on. I didn't know what those lyrics were. I never looked them up, but the movie informed me, and now I feel much smarter. Anyhow, that's besides the point. Who else is here with us today on the line?
Well, I am Todd Selick, and I am lacking any sense of the Aristotelian unities.
Yes, it's a problem we all have. I recommend a few glasses of water every night. But yes, I want to know up front from all of you on this podcast, what is your experience with the Addams Family as a property, the TV show, the movies, the games, the serial even, the cartoon? There's two cartoons. There's a lot of Addams Family related things happening in our world in the past like 60 years. Where did you encounter them? What's your relationship with them? Henry, how about you?
As a child of the 90s, the debut of the film really got me. Like, I was pulled in. It followed the same road that Batman did into my childhood life as well, because my mom grew up loving the 60s versions of those, and as those started to rerun again in my childhood, I got into them, and then right around the time as the movies started coming out. So, you know, obviously there's very little in common with the Adam West Batman and the Michael Keaton Batman, but Addams Family, the original, graduates well into the live action one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just loved it. I loved how hip and cool the Addams Family were. The song was catchy. I think I even like the MC Hammer song.
There's a tag team song and an MC Hammer song. Yeah. Tag team song, very lazy.
That's one of the laziest songs there's ever been.
They took an existing song and put the words "The Addams Family" in it.
Yeah, but
is that the "Do What You Want to Do, Play How You Want to Play" song, or am I thinking
that's the MC Hammer one?
Yes.
So the
tag team song is "Whoop There It Is, The Addams Family,"
and that's there it is, The Addams Family.
Yeah, yes. There you go.
Yeah, I only just rewatched Addams Family Values this weekend and was reminded, like, oh God, that song's so bad. But yeah, I loved it in the theaters. Then the sequel too, like, and I didn't even realize how, you know, awesome the cast was. It was one of those things like where I just thought, oh, things are always good. I'm a kid. It's a good thing. And then as an adult rewatching them, I was like, oh, these are about as good as it can get for remaking a classic intellectual property. But yeah, as I get older, I really appreciate them. And I especially like that they're a bunch of like sex crazed weirdos. Like, that's what I love about them.
But they're sex crazed weirdos who mean well.
Yeah,
that's important. Yeah. Todd, how about you?
Well, the first Addams Family thing I ever saw was the cartoon from the 1970s.
Ooh,
it was made in 1973. It only brought back a few of the cast. Apparently, it was a spinoff from Scooby Doo, and I saw this in the late 1980s because some British TV station, my family lived in Germany, and that's what we got, was rerunning it. And my parents knew what it was, but I'd never seen it before. And the cartoon was not very good. I only really remember it because it was one of the few TV shows that my parents didn't want me watching. Normally, when they didn't want me watching a cartoon, it was because it was something objectionable, like Thundercats, Hawks. But this one, they just told me, this show is terrible. It's not funny. Don't watch it.
Wow.
So from there, I guess I really, there was only, I can only go up when in my estimation of the Addams Family, because I remember reading about Fester's Quest and Nintendo Power. I didn't play it until years later. But then I remember, of course, the big Addams Family blitz of the early 90s, and I got to see the movies and really liked them. So that kind of led me to go back and look at a lot of things. And surprising how the original cartoons and everything, well, the comics, that is. And so there's a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I after that rough initial first impression, I do like the Addams Family a lot. Mm-hmm.
You found the Addams Family through a weird source. I did too, Todd. I was exposed to them. So there were a lot of reruns of old things on TV when I was a kid. In my area, though, they weren't rerunning the Addams Family or the Munsters. I grew up watching things like Gilligan's Island, The Brady Bunch, Andy Griffith, Happy Days, Beverly Hillbillies. For some reason, maybe they thought these monsters are too extreme for Ohio viewers to watch. So I was exposed to Addams Family through just like pop culture osmosis, but also through the game Fester's Quest, where, of course, I was reading every Nintendo Power, and whenever they covered Fester's Quest, I would think, oh, I know the Addams Family is a TV show, and these characters seem fun, but I don't know how to watch it. I don't know where to watch it. I know it's an old show, but like just reading about that game got me into the idea of the Addams Family, and of course, I played the game. I thought I had the problem. It turns out the game did. We'll talk more about that soon. But then, of course, the movies came out. I was the perfect age for it. Nine. I saw them. I loved them. And yeah, like really, it was the Fester's Quest to the movie pipeline. And I've honestly have not seen a lot of the black and white TV series, although I have seen a few episodes here and there on Pluto TV, and they're still really fun. But yeah, weirdly enough, Fester's Quest was the gateway drug to the Addams Family.
John Astin's voice is still mesmerizing to me. When as a kid, when he would appear as a guest star and stuff, I was like, oh, man, it's Gomez. He's talking. Like, wow.
I think I saw him a lot on Night Court as the main character's dad before I saw The Addams Family. So I had some built-in John Astin love. But since one of our guests, Todd, he's the guy who got the dirt on Fester's Quest straight from the source. We'll still talk about the game, but again, we have covered it in 40 minutes on Retronauts Micro 50, so check that out if you haven't listened to it. But I still want Todd to tell the story himself when we get there to covering the games. But yes, that is the first Addams Family game, and has an interesting story behind it. And by the way, I want to point out this episode is topical. I didn't just pull this idea out of my ass, because there is a new Addams Family movie in theaters now. Probably not anymore, because it did very badly. But the Addams Family 2, their Addams Family Vacation movie, I saw it in theaters. It was perfectly cromulent. And of course, it's also the 30th anniversary of the first movie that came out in 91.
Which that then was the 25th anniversary of the TV series ending. Yeah, when you had mentioned you had seen that to me, that you'd seen that movie in theaters, I was like, wait, they made a sequel to that? What? And also, like, every Hotel Transylvania, it was their third one where they go on vacation. Like, it's always vacation in one of these sequels.
Yeah, like, all these other monster-based things beat Addams Family to the punch in terms of CGI movies. So, but the first one did pretty good, but second one, it's all right. But, you know, it's good to see Addams Family awareness is still alive today.
Mm-hmm.
It really seems to work in cycles, I guess. I mean, I could compare it to Garfield, how, you know, there's a deliberate attempt to pull the brand back when it seems like it's getting too much, but it's basically evergreen. And I'm kind of interested in hearing which side of the Adams Family and a Munsters debate you guys fall on.
Because I have very strong feelings.
Yes. Believe me, we'll get into this.
Oh, boy.
First, I want to cover the origins of the idea of the Addams Family. So, Addams Family, created by Charles Addams, very clever naming there. They're his family, the little characters he created. He was born in 1912, died in 1988. It's no coincidence that Fester's Quest came out in 1989. Widows were approving a lot of projects in 1989.
Oh, man. The Lady Coyleton. I learned a bit about her. She's crazy, it sounded like.
Though the individual TV characters were not named until the TV show came around. And the only reason that Gomez is typically seen as a non-white character is that there was a choice of one or of two names, and they chose Gomez. That's the only reason why.
Well, and then Raul Julia, you know, actually codified. It was a non-white man playing him for the first time.
Now he's Oscar Isaac in the new movies.
Yeah, which that it did. Not to talk about those new movies too early, but all those voice casting, it's like, couldn't they just be a live action one? Why can't they be the live action people?
I agree.
Actors won't sit still and be painted up for movies anymore.
No.
They'll do a voice acting because that'll be like 3 days tops of their lives.
Everything needs to be in front of a green screen for them to be in it. But yeah, so the Addams Family originated as a series of New Yorker cartoons, one panel comics, and Addams would write and draw around 150 of these total. So to date, published works of the Addams Family, there were only 150 single-panel strips that were published. Sorry, single-panel comics that were published in total.
It's part of the New Yorker cinematic universe.
With that that guy with the monocle and the butterfly?
Yeah.
He's in there, too?
And a lot of psychiatrists. 7,000 psychiatrists. And I had an uncle who was the comic book expert uncle of mine. And when I told him, like, oh, yeah, I like the Addams Family, he's like, did you know it was a comic strip? I was like, what? And then he showed me some of the, like, classics that he had in collections around. And I was like, wow, look at that.
It's kind of disappointing that you can read, let's say, every Garfield ever written. You can just go on to, like, what, gocomics.com and say, computer, show me every Garfield.
Yeah.
You can start in 78, work your way up to 2021, and read the entire Garfield run. To read these comics, I'm sure a lot of them are online. If you do Google image searches, you can find them. But there's one comprehensive thing that's out right now, a 2010 hardcover called The Addams Family and Evolution. That is the only place I know of that actually contains all of the Addams works.
Wow.
And some that were not published.
How can they not have a digital deal for that yet? That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I mean, they're like, you can probably read a third of them. Just people have scanned them, or just like, again, Google Image Search will find you a lot of them. But again, but this is not available digitally. But this could be the one hardcover book in the past 5 years that I actually buy, because I can't get it anywhere else.
Now, does that just have the Addams Family cartoons, or does it have like all of his other New Yorker cartoons, which were, you know, like, I guess it was kind of like The Far Side, where he would have little grim little jokes as well with about unrelated characters?
I think it does. It might contain some of his other cartoons, but you can actually see those too online, because he didn't just do Addams Family stuff, because he had, I mean, they made him a lot of money, but he was also a working artist. So his story is very interesting. He was not this morbid, morose guy you might think he is. He took his work very seriously, Charles Addams did, but his friends knew him as an eccentric, fun-loving ladies' man who was a hit at parties,
nice,
always doing like fun tricks and pranks. And the 2006 biography about him called Charles Addams, A Cartoonist's Life, was just republished like this week.
Oh, boy.
I've got that coming to me on Kindle on the 27th of October, so it looks like a really fun read.
That's nice, man. He sounds like a Gomez Addams figure himself there. With all that. Everybody thinks he'd be dark, but he's actually just a fun dude at parties.
And you mentioned he dated Jacqueline and Kennedy Onassis, or was that...
Yes, right after the assassination, he dated Jackie Kennedy. And okay... We're going to talk about the Kennedy assassination up next here because I have some theories. So that's just a brief overview of his life. Obviously, if you want to know more about him, there's a great biography out about him. I recommend it, even though I haven't read it. People are saying it's good. The Addams Family would be best known through the TV series, which only ran for 2 years and 64 episodes. So essentially, the TV series was one pandemic long. That's all that contained the entire 64-episode run of The Addams Family. But there was a competing monster sitcom, The Munsters, that debuted a week after The Addams Family, but it only lasted 2 years and amounted to 70 episodes. And also Bewitched started the same fall season.
Wow.
Yes.
Boy, Bewitched got to last like a million
8 years.
Yeah, is that long? I mean, Elizabeth Montgomery, I guess she had a lot of power, too. I guess Bewitched probably did better in the ratings than the Addams Family and Munsters.
And my theory is, President Kennedy assassinated, November 1963, innocence dies. 10 months later, we get monster shows. I see a connection. This is the new normal. We are all in Monster Town.
And the Beatles are very big, too. Like, we're rejecting American values all over the place. Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, I like that. I guess it was hooked into how old monster movies of the 40s were, like, easy programming in television back then. So a whole generation of kids were being introduced to monsters, all these classic movie monsters, so everybody's going to get in on the bandwagon on that.
Yeah, and I think that's why Munsters and Addams Family were broadcast in black and white, because they evoke the same idea of the black and white 30s movies you would see on TV over and over again, with like Frankenstein and Dracula and Abbott and Costello meeting them and werewolves and things like that.
And but Todd, you asked our opinion on Munsters versus Addams Family. I am firmly in the Addams Family camp. I never particularly liked the Munsters. I think all the actors on it are fun. You know, Al Lewis especially, he's a lot of fun. But I guess in concept, and the more I think about it, the more I dislike it, the Munsters, they're just a one-to-one. It's like there's, you know, there's Frankenstein's monster, there's a vampire lady, there's a werewolf boy, and all that. It's so much like better for me that the Addams Family is like, they're just weird. There's not a, you can't classify them as any one thing. And second, that the Addams Family, they love being weird. They're a bunch of crazy weirdos. The Munsters want to conform. They're conformists. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we want to fit in suburban life. It's like, you disgust me, you Munsters. Like, enjoy being like rich weirdos like the Addamses.
Mm-hmm. And Todd, where do you fall in this camp?
Oh, I agree. And, well, I've never really had too much of fondness for the Munsters, maybe because their video games weren't quite as weird as Fester's Quest. But I definitely agree with what you're saying. I mean, Munsters falls into that same sort of recycling monster category, like Groovy Ghoulies or whatever, where you just have, you know, Dracula, Frankenstein, all the usual things. And I'm probably a hypocrite since I really like the Darkstalkers series of games. But, you know, I do think Addams Family deserves a lot of credit for starting with something really unique.
That is true. Darkstalkers,
especially when you get past the family itself.
Darkstalkers is the Munsters fighting game, if you want to break it down like that. But yeah, I agree. The Addams Family are their own thing, their own unique thing. Like, they're not based on existing stereotypes. Maybe Lurch is Frankenstein, all right? That's as far as I'll go. But like, what is Uncle Fester?
Yeah.
He's dressed like a monk. Sometimes he's portrayed as like an old college boy, like from the 20s. And he has a blunderbuss and puts light bulbs in his mouth. Like, what is Uncle Fester? It's such a unique creation.
And they just have like a hand that's like, well, it's thing, it's just, you know, it's a hand, it does stuff, you know. Lurch, I mean, he's sort of a Frankenstein, but also he could just be like, he's a homunculus, you know, or he's just like a what even is he? What is grandmama? Is she like a witch? And same with Morticia, is just like, she's just weird. They're all just weirdos. And also, like, I don't know, they have a sexy, weird relationship instead of, like, again, the Munsters, just too buttoned down. The best thing in Munsters, I think, other than Al Lewis, is that the daughter, like, they have the problem daughter who looks normal,
right?
Like the perfect blonde teenage girl.
Marilyn Munster.
Yes.
Right. But yeah, so there have been four Addams Family movies to date, and soon we'll have a new Munsters movie brought to us by Rob Zombie. I didn't know there was an old Munsters movie until I looked it up, but yeah, like right after the series ended, they made a movie called Munster Go Home, where I think they go to the UK, and it was made primarily to sell the idea to foreign markets for syndication.
Of course, of course! I should have known, man.
And it was like the monster invasion of Britain.
In our childhoods, they tried to reboot the Munsters with a lot of the actors, too. Mm-hmm. I remember there was that. And,
the Munsters Today was the name of the new one.
We're the Munsters Today. And I believe Bryan Singer directed a Munsters attempt at a reboot pilot thing.
1313 Mockingbird Lane.
Yes. Yeah.
Which they aired the pilot, but NBC didn't greenlight the show.
And we've driven by the Munsters house together on our tour at the Universal Hollywood. Yeah.
They certainly like showing it off.
The Addams Family house is better than the Munsters house, too. I'm just going to say
much cooler.
Like, look, the Munster Mobile and the Dracula, like those are cooler cars if we're talking about just car versus car in the Addams families. But the Addams Family, like, they don't really have a specifically neat car, I suppose.
So I looked into why these high concept monster shows didn't last very long. And, you know, people assume, you know, the public was being inundated with these monster based sitcoms. They're like, enough already. I get it. But there's more concrete reasons. So Addams Family was never very popular in its first run. Like the first season was number 23. And then the second season, it fell out of the top 30. So not a very popular show. And also of note, Batman debuted halfway through the second seasons of both The Munsters and The Addams Family. That was the primetime show kids flocked to. It was in color, too, with Batman. So,
and what color? Like, so much color in that show.
Every bright color is in that show. So it made these shows look dreary and uninteresting in comparison.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, of course, once you got Batman, it's like 66 is known for, like, Beatles, Batman, and Bond. And by that time, like a 2-year-old show like the Addams Family, especially in black and white, like how can that not look like old by comparison and old hat?
You're
like,
dumping your black and white TV into a lake is what you did back then. Yeah. Go to Sears, get a new one.
I was surprised to find that the Addams Family only lasted 2 years, considering how much, you know, of an impact it had in pop culture in general. I mean, I was expecting it would be something with a really long running time on TV or something like that.
Yeah, when you ask people, if you would just ask someone in the street or whatever, which is what I do every day, I say, hey, how many Addams Family episodes do you think there are? And they are like, I don't know, 100, 150. But yeah, people probably are surprised there's only 64.
Yeah.
There's more episodes of the new Addams Family.
Ugh.
There are more episodes of the Munsters today than there are of the Munsters.
Man, that information is still shocking me right now, as you say.
Yes.
I guess, too, with 64 episodes, you'd also think, oh, that it was at least on for 3 years. Like, no, two. They just cranked out that many back then.
The seasons were much bigger back then. Let's move on to the 90s renaissance before we talk about the game. So, Addams Family, not a hit on TV, but this 64-episode series found a nice home in the world of syndicated rerun packages, which were rerun over and over, and this is where boomers and Gen Xers fell in love with this small collection of Addams Family adventures.
Yeah, that's and like you were saying, Todd, with because the Addams Family, like, they had that one appearance on a Scooby-Doo crossover episode. I think it was one of the new Scooby-Doo movies. And then that led to Hanna-Barbera doing a show. We saw that same with the Laverne and Shirley one. And
right.
So many. There's in the 70s, all of these 60s shows like Star Trek and Gilligan's Island got big with children in afternoon programming that then new seasons in animation started up for them.
And they became so popular in reruns that they even came back for a 1977 made-for-TV revival movie called Halloween with the new Addams Family, which features mostly the original cast, although it's very cheap-looking, filmed on video and in color, but it is really the last hurrah for this cast. And it's on YouTube in full because nobody cares.
See, that's why shows like Adam's Family, the original, or Batman 66 look still great, because they were filmed on film.
They look gorgeous. Yeah. And Star Trek, too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and Lurch was on a Batman as well. I discovered that. But you revealed to me the shocking information about it.
Yeah, he was on Batman 6 months after Adam's Family was canceled. So
that's why they could only get Lurch. Yeah.
Ted Cassidy was available. There were no monster roles that week. So, yeah, so, you know, not a hit when it first aired, kind of unpopular, but it's real great syndication fodder, real great rerun fodder. People are watching it over and over again. They're loving these characters. They get a cartoon, they get a revival movie, and then 25 years go by in just a snap. And it's time to appeal to the richest and therefore most important people there are, and that is baby boomers. So a lot of TV adaptations, movie adaptations of TV shows are happening in the 90s. Like, so many things became movies, like The Little Rascals and Beverly Hillbillies and The Mod Squad. I mean, you name it.
Yeah.
No matter how unpopular a show, like, I was pointing out on another podcast we were doing, the show SWAT, which nobody remembers, has a movie starring Samuel L. Jackson, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and Colin Farrell. I only know that because I worked in a movie theater when that movie came out. And I saw the end of it while cleaning the theater. So I remember the last 6 minutes very well.
The Fugitive.
Yeah, The Fugitive. Yeah.
Another one. Like a TV show that I don't think is that memorable, but the movie just eclipsed it. Well, it was so big.
And now we're as old as our baby boomer parents were in the 90s, so we're getting that for most of the stuff we had growing up. Or honestly, it's already happened.
Yes.
Just waiting for someone to make a Pirates of Dark Water movie.
Oh.
That's my revival white whale.
I think we're going to need several Kickstarters to get that off the ground.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, like the scary math is, so you're right. You said it up front, Henry, that 25 years after the TV series ended, it was 91, we had our Addams Family movie. 28 years after 91, we had the new Addams Family movie. So it's very frightening to think about.
Yep. Yeah. Same with Rocky and Bullwinkle. I did that math on Rocky and Bullwinkle. Like, Rocky, the first season of Simpsons is older than Rocky and Bullwinkle's first season was when the Simpsons debuted. Yeah.
I don't like it. Let's talk about these 90s movies, though, because I love them. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I'm just going to give you the gist of it because this is just one podcast about a lot of Addams Family things. But Tim Burton was going to direct this Addams Family movie, which, you know, probably would have been good too, you know, but
it makes too much sense to not have happened. Yeah.
Yeah. They found the right guy, but he passed to do Batman Returns, although he hated working on that movie. Mm. And, you know, currently he's come back around because he is working on the Wednesday Addams show for Netflix.
He's like, I can't fight this feeling anymore. I got to do. I mean, when he did Dark Shadows, I was like, well, you should have just done Addams Family.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, he's back to the Addams Family 30 years later. So
I wonder who would play Gomez in his version of it.
Boy, God. Do we need him back?
I mean, yeah, it could only be Johnny Depp.
I hope it's just Wednesday in this series.
Yes, I hope so too. Yeah.
So the directing role went to Barry Sonnenfeld, a first time director, although he was no new person to movies. He was the cinematographer for the Coen brothers on things like Blood Simple and Raising Arizona and the movie with all the Irish people in it.
The Miller's Crossing.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah.
So he knew what he was doing. And if you go back to Raising Arizona, there's a lot of like really Addams Family shots in there, just especially cameras like zooming through places.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, the camera. Now, once you know that Sonnenfeld got his start as a cinematographer, like, it makes so much sense because the camera is just flying around all of the time in this. And yeah, actually, I guess, you know, Raising Arizona 2 is full of a bunch of like weirdos all hanging out with each other.
They've got a trailer, not a house, but still, the idea is there.
The Addams is without money and aristocratic means. Yeah.
So this original 91 movie was being developed and produced by Orion Pictures, now defunct, but it was going way over budget. So they sold the film to Paramount, and Paramount made a lot of money. This movie made $191 million in 1991.
Man, that's big. This is before movies made $1 billion. That's a big thing, especially for, I don't know, like musty old stuff gets remade all the time. It doesn't always make a bunch of money, but I say that really speaks to the quality of the film as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember it being really like pretty much the big film for the end of 91. Maybe, I think, I remember having an argument over whether we were seeing that or Beauty and the Beast with my family. But there really weren't too many other choices. I mean, Hook, I think, was the other movie that kind of dominated, but not too many people talk about that one nowadays.
That's true, yeah. Hook was the other big kids movie that season, but everybody I knew was so excited about Addams Family, nobody talked about Hook or mentioned Hook.
No, I only my Filipino friends who love Rufio and, mm-hmm. and Hook, they were the only people talking about it. I've heard a lot about Hook recently because the film Space Jam: A New Legacy just rips off that plot of, of Hook.
Great. But, yeah. That's also the plot of 80 other movies
from
that time period. So, yeah, $191 million was made on, like, a $30 million budget. Tons of merchandising, tons of money and other channels, too. So, yeah, it's a great movie. You know, Sonnenfeld really showed himself off in his first showing as a director. And it's funny that this movie could have just been garbage, right?
Mm-hmm,
it could have
mm-hmm.
been, like, the Beverly Hillbillies movie, which has good performances, but who cares?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This captured the spirit. All of the casting is just perfect. And despite how the plot is a little weak and there's the weird idea about a fake Fester and stuff, everything still works.
I mean, it's one of the best casts of, like, a movie ever. Like, everybody is perfectly cast in it. Like, it's all the people you cast. They even were like, you know, oh, like 2 years before this, the hottest show on TV, Twin Peaks, there's a very tall, weird-looking guy in it. Well, that's... obviously should be Lurch. Like, Raul Julia, the greatest, like, everybody just rules in it so hard. They even, you know, I, as somebody who doesn't like that Colin Farrell has been cast as, like, a fat guy in something, they just put a fat suit on him, when I'm really of the belief of, like, there's so many overweight actors out there who never get to star in anything, and instead you're putting fat makeup on skinny people. That's also what they do with Christopher Lloyd, but man, is he good.
He's great in it. Yeah, he's at the height of his powers, like immediately post Doc Brown.
Yeah, and I think he shaved his head for real.
I think he did. Yeah, it looks like he did.
Yeah. Who does that now? Nobody shaves their head.
I even remember back when, you know, we were having a debate in the family about what movie to watch, and I think I even asked my mom, why do you want to see The Addams Family? And she just said, the actors. I want to go see it's for the actors. She loved all the actors that were in it, even if she was only sort of so-so on The Addams Family itself. So I think that really helped put it over with a lot of people.
Yeah, like, I still kind of don't know who Raul Julia is. I know he's Gomez Adams. I know he's M. Bison. I know he's in Overdrawn at the Memory Bank. To me, he's still like, who is this guy? Where did he come from? He was 50 years old. Man. He had a 25-year acting career before this, but this is what made him a known star, and unfortunately, he would die 3 years later.
It's very sad. Yeah, that he just is so much that he brings to Gomez that you wouldn't expect. Back there, I was rewatching Values this weekend, and my husband said his only note on why Raul isn't truly perfect is he says Gomez should not be taller than his wife, but that he is which is, you know, hey, Raul Julia is just tall, you know. I agree that Gomez should be a short king, just like Sean Astin and John Astin and his son Sean Astin too.
Both short kings.
Short kings, yes.
Yes, and one little fact about the movie I wanted to point out, which I thought was very cute. I can't go into the history of, like, every fact about the movie, but. The plot of Addams Family, the first movie, is that, you know, their lawyer owes money to a loan shark, and together with the loan shark, they get this guy they know, the son of the loan shark, who looks a lot like Fester, to infiltrate the house, say, I'm Fester, I'm back, and find the money to steal from the Addams. And in the end of the movie, the plot was going to be, we don't know if he was the real Fester, even though he joins the family at the end. The cast had the table read, and they were shocked at the idea that Fester wasn't the real Fester. So they all got into a huddle, and Christina Ricci spoke for the group. Little 8-year-old Christina Ricci spoke to Barry Sonnenfeld and said, we have to make Fester the real Fester. And Barry Sonnenfeld went to Christopher Lloyd, like, do you care? And he's like, I don't care. So he decided to rewrite the end of the movie to make sure you knew this is actually Fester. He lost his memory, and he's back in the family. And I thought that was a great idea.
That movie would be way worse at the end. You just go like, well, you don't. I think what it was like, you're supposed to go like, well, you don't know. Like, no, you need to know that you saw the real Fester and not just some faker that the family. I mean, I get that there's a certain... it speaks to the weirdness of the Adamses that they would just go like, you know what? We don't care. We feel like you're one of us, whether you're Fester or not. But it's all about, much like the Fast and Furious films, it's about family. And so I think it needs to be, you need to be sure it's actually Fester.
Yeah.
Right. I think the audiences, they wanted a Fester in the movie, guaranteed. And I think either they had to have the real Fester show up or, you know, confirm that this was him. Because otherwise, the plot doesn't really have a satisfying conclusion.
And I think Sonnenfeld, too, he really showed off, like, why he was a director for the future, because he was so into special effects and filming around special effects. Like, the I think a big payoff for, like, my parents seeing this movie was that they watched, you know, this crappy thing as a kid, or, like, when they had no money. And, yes, that things are – a thing especially really is a forearm just at times.
I'm doing the effect on this Zoom call right now. It's like, oh, Thing is right here with us.
Yeah, but here you can finally see where Thing ends and where he can just skitter around on his fingers. Like, yeah, I mean, just the visual of – Thing running down, like, the street to chase after something was like, whoa, that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, and Sonnenfeld, in a recent interview, like, looking back on the movie, of course, he's an old guy. I'm starting to feel old, too. And he's like, if we made this movie today, it cost five times as much money, it wouldn't be good. The reason this is so good is because we had, like, physical actors, nothing was CGI, and it was filmed on film. When you film in 4K, you see the flaw of every special effect. And because of film and because of practical effects, it's, you believe everything, and that's why the movie is so good.
He does sound a little like a grump, but also he's right. He's right.
Yes. He's right.
Yeah. Well, I probably helped that, like, Orion just seemed like they trusted. I've heard this on a podcast with Mike Mitchell, who's you know, a very funny guy, but also works in Hollywood a bunch. And it's just that Hollywood is now full of executives. Those Orion execs were like, I guess people have heard of it, Adams Family, and let's just hand it to a director. You know what you're doing, whatever. Now the film studios are full of people who read, you know, like Robert McKee's story or whatever. Like, I know what the story. Oh, you know, the hero's journey should actually be this. Like,
where's the save the cat moment?
Exactly. Every executive has all this information that makes them think they know as much as a filmmaker. And so they just, you end up with how everything is just like a fucking, like, slurry of the same type of movie all the time.
Overly focus grouped.
Yeah.
I do want to have a little sidebar here because we do have time. I want to talk about just our brief thoughts, because it'll be a fun conversation to talk about if we like the first Addams Family movie more than the second one or vice versa. My own thoughts up front are, I watched both of them recently. I think the first one has a weaker plot, but the performances are better, and they usually stick to the inside of the house, which is where you want the Addams to be.
Yes.
Second movie, my own thoughts on that are, I think it's good. I think the villain is better and the story is better, but they take them out of the house too much. Raul Julia, clearly sick, can't do as many things, which is a bummer. The summer camp stuff is fun, but it's very much like 90s anti-political correctness humor, where it's like, you want to watch Disney, it's going to brainwash you, man. That kind of humor is a little, like, eye-rolly, but still good performances there. I still come out on top saying, I've declared myself the winner already, by the way, by saying the Addams Family, the first movie, is the superior film. And that's all I'll say. Todd, do you have any opinions about this?
I would have to go with the second one. I kind of think it's a funnier movie overall, and I like how it really gets into, as you said, Raul Julia doesn't get to do as much, but I feel like it gets into a little bit more with the kids and gives them a little more time. And the characters, I think, get a little more time to do a little more, especially they introduce the baby, which normally introducing a baby to a plot is kind of the weakest idea. But I feel like it's just a more active movie, and especially as far as the villain goes, I mean, Joan Cusack, she's just perfect for it. And compared to the first one, where I think the villains in the first one never really feel like too much of a force in the movie. And the first one, as I said, also has the plot with Uncle Fester, which feels like almost an elaborate loop to get back to where it started. Like, at the end of the movie, you thought, oh, well, they're back to normal. This is the Addams Family I recognize, but it took an entire film to get there. So they're both good films, but I kind of have to go with the second one on that.
Yeah, I like how in the second one it starts off with, yes, the entire family is here. And my last comment I will make on the second one is something I thought was very clever. I totally forgot about how that movie went because I haven't seen it in like 20 years, 20 plus years. But watching it again, one of the first things that's said in the movie is, Gomez, I'm pregnant. I'm having a baby right now.
Yes.
And then she has the baby immediately. There's no like, oh, wait till the end of the first act. There's going to be a bunch of pregnancy jokes. It'll be wacky fun. But no, immediately within 5 minutes, the baby is there.
I do love the rushedness of it. Yeah, so I'm hearing all you guys say, what you guys have to say. I
You're going to be the tiebreaker here, Henry.
Well, so I do think that it's great that Fester's my favorite Adams, and I like that he is complete in this film and also in the sequel, that it's not about him finding himself or questioning, like, am I? I don't know. Like, I like that he's that the whole way through. And him and Joan Cusack are perfect together. She's so good.
She's
like,
amazing in that
movie. Yeah. Oppositely, after just rewatching Family Values, I think the camp stuff goes on almost too long. I do, but I love Christine Baranski as well. But I just, that baby, some of that baby action is a little baby geniuses for me. And yeah. I don't like seeing that.
The baby, like, Rube Goldberg's his way into the climax and defeats the villains is just, like, the weakest way to end the movie.
Yeah, though there's a couple times where, thanks to special effects magic, I do have the reaction of, like, they're about to drop a baby. Oh my God. But yeah, Joan, man, it's so close, but I think I like Adam's Family the first more, because even though Fester isn't fully himself, I think he's great as a vision to go through, mm-hmm. like the introduction to the world of the Adams Family and get to know everything, like the party where he does the sword dance and
the mamushka.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Most of Adams Family Values feels like just a replay of the first movie. They're like, oh, here's the dance sequence, here's the party, here's the this and that. I picked the first one just ever so slightly, but both are great. And yeah, Christina Ricci, like, when in Adam's Family Values especially, when Wednesday has to smile,
yes,
that is like Oscar winning performance of her in character there.
I forgot about that moment. I wanted to stand up and applaud just the face acting as she's just, like, moving her mouth into this rictus grin.
Yeah. Oh God. It's so good. Both are great, but I'm going to have to go with the first one just because that I don't like the baby. The baby holds it back a little bit. I'm sorry, Todd. Yeah, I must disagree.
Okay. Honestly, the whole baby thing at the climax, watching it now, it kind of reminded me of, well, Maggie Simpson almost, how they would have her work her into some gags and things like that and have her be the one to save the day, so to speak. And I will say, not to go on too long, but one of my favorite parts of Family Values is where, you know, Joan Cusack's character, she's confronting them all at the end and going over how she murdered her husbands, and the Adamses are completely on her side.
Yeah.
You know, they're basically agreeing with her. Like, she would have fit into the family perfectly if she hadn't tried to kill them.
They should have made a point to her of, like, you absolutely fit in here, like, mm-hmm. just stay. But they already did that with the woman in the first movie who married into the family with Cousin It.
Right.
So
yeah.
It would just be a repeat of that if they, you know, the nicest thing I'll say about the baby is it is some silly baby hijinks, but it does just straight up murder Joan Cusack's Debbie. Like, it kills her into a pile of dust.
Turns into a pile of dust.
Yeah.
But yeah, great watches, even if you're in November. Check them out. Adam's Family movies are very fantastic. But we're going to take a brief break now and come back and talk all about the world of Adam's Family games.
Oh boy, I can't wait for Future History 101 today.
I hear Prof. Timesworth is going to teach us about World War VI.
Gather round, students. It is time to learn.
Podford University, where history and future are the same class. Available on iTunes, Spotify, and everywhere you get podcasts.
Hey, Lassie, what are you doing here? Timmy's in a well. Sequelcast 2 and Friends is a podcast looking at movies in a franchise, one film at a time, like Harry Potter, Hellraiser, and The Hobbit. And sometimes the hosts talk about video games and TV as well. And now it's part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. Oh, Lassie, we don't need to rescue Timmy. He likes the well enough, I guess. Darth Vader is Luke's father. Lassie, I told you to lay off the spoilers.
Hey,
So now we're back to talk about the world of Addams Family Games, and Todd is on this podcast for almost this reason entirely, in that, Todd, you got the dirt on Fester's Quest. You've solved, like, I don't know, a 25-year mystery. Like, what is up with this game? Why is it so mean? Todd, can you explain your journey and how you found answers?
Well, I was basically drawn to Fester's Quest because it has a reputation. It's sometimes even lumped in with, like, the worst games on the NES, and yeah, I think it's even on one of those 100 worst games of all time list on a website. So I had to give it a shot because it was made by Sunsoft, and that's a company I didn't really think made too many bad games. But when I played it, I thought, you know, this is really hard and unfair, but it's not terrible. It's not like, you know, Rocky and Bullwinkle terrible or Captain Planet game terrible or something like that. Because it's overhead sections and Blaster Master, even some of the enemies look the same. So I wondered if, you know, this was originally a Blaster Master game that they just redid as Fester's Quest, or if it started off as an unrelated game, maybe based on an anime series that Sunsoft's American branch just reworked into a Addams Family thing, which would happen with a lot of games back then. But so I went looking around, and I actually found the designer that was Michael Mendenheim, and the producer, Richard Robbins. And so I just sent them emails and asked what was going on. And I found out, now you can listen to the older Retronauts episode for the full story and read the interview and everything, but the gist of it is that the producer, Mr. Robbins, he basically based the game on a dream he had, and he decided he wanted to make a Fester's game. He talked to Lady Colton, he basically called out and had all sorts of conferences, and I think he was lucky that he came along before the movie, before they signed a lot of those, because I don't think they would have let Uncle Fester fight aliens after the films. They had to basically stick to a new vision of. But the game is basically based on the original Addams Family. So Uncle Fester has a big blunderbuss gun called Genevieve that he carries around, and he shoots things, walks around, and it's a very difficult. It doesn't have any continue system in the American version because they kind of forgot to put that in. And it's harder in other ways, but Fester isn't really as he doesn't have the mobility. He can't fire diagonally or move diagonally. So it's a very difficult game in that part. You have to take it really slow. You have to basically spend a few minutes when you first start building up your weapons, making sure you have the best weapon. And at that point, I wouldn't say it's a great game, but it becomes tolerable in a sense. And it has, the thing I like about it is it has that Sunsoft feel to it. Mm-hmm. The sprite graphics, especially the bosses, they look really nice. And the music is really catchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best remix of the Addams Family theme in all of video games is in this game.
Oh, yeah. The opening, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't know, like, when I was doing that last podcast, I didn't know the European version was actually fixed. So when I did that Retronauts in the past, people were saying, oh, I beat this game, and I didn't believe them. But now I think they probably play the European version because they make it a lot easier. In Fester's Quest, a big problem is your shots, when they hit something, they cancel out. And because a lot of your shots are like in a sine wave pattern, like you fire the gun and it immediately goes into a wall and it doesn't hit the enemy. So
yes,
they fix that. The shots now go through walls and enemies take fewer hits to kill. And really, that's all that fixes the game. That's all you need.
Yeah, it does improve the game a lot. And in the original, they stick best gun, which fires a straight ahead, this barrage of just little triangles that wipes a lot of things out. And one thing that it'll come up in some later games is if you're damaged, you basically lose the that level of the gun. You have to go back to a weaker weapon, which is punishing you even more. And Fester can only take two hits at first. So it's a game that frustrated a lot of people back then, although oddly enough, the producer said it sold about 1 million copies.
Oh, upon doing this podcast, I thought if that fact is true, maybe that convinced Paramount to buy the movie. Maybe without Fester's Quest, we wouldn't have an Addams Family movie, because they're like, do we care about Addams Family? Does the audience care? And somebody said, hey, people bought 1 million copies of this Fester game. People know about the Addams Family. They want to know the story of Fester. So maybe without this game selling so well, they wouldn't have made the movie. Or like Orion would have made a worse movie and it just would have failed miserably.
Right. And even today, it's a pretty common game, so I kind of believe that it sold so many copies. And if you're out looking for old Nintendo games, if you're still buying those, I would kind of recommend it because it's not that expensive, and I don't think it's ever going to get reissued. I don't think we're going to see a limited run games reissue Fester's Quest with a novelty head vice or light bulb or something.
I'm sure the Nintendo Power cover helped quite a bit on that, too. I with the, you know, that blunderbuss thing and all of his weapons, it does make me you know, think about how the Christopher Lloyd version of Fester is less, he's more of a perv than, like, especially in Family Values. I forgot there were so many jokes about just, like, Fester watching people have sex. Like, there was, there was way more of those than I remembered. He didn't invent too many things. He mostly just talked about watching people have sex or stalking women. So, yeah.
And, like, Lloyd's performance is different than the TV show in that the guy, Jackie Coogan, the actor, was kind of doing, like, a Curly voice a bit because he looked like Curly the Stooge. And then when you get to the New Addams Family and then the movies with the CGI movies, Nick Kroll, he's doing a kind of a Jackie Coogan voice too. So Christopher Lloyd's performance is unique. It's a little Doc Brown-y. It's a little just him sinking his neck into his chest, or sorry, his chin into his neck. Yeah. It's a fun, unique character. It's like Doc Brown after some bad things have happened to him.
I also, as a child watching Addams Family Values, I did not understand the wedding night scene of him. When I was like, oh, I guess he just wanted to go to sleep at the end of this scene. I did not read it as him climaxing prematurely.
That's right.
Yeah, but yeah, the Fester's Quest, I played it a little bit as a kid, but I definitely bounced right off of it because it was like too, if something was too hard on rental, I would ask my mom, like, please return. Like, we give a hug.
Take this away from me. But yeah, I want to talk about the other Addams Family games. They're not nearly as notable or as popular as this one, although I don't have sales figures in front of me, but let's talk about them. So to get things started here, this is very confusing. Many of the games we'll be talking about are simply called The Addams Family, based on the 1991 movie. There are 12 of these. Jesus. There are 12 of these games. I'm not sure which of these is the core experience, but for the most part, there are two distinct versions of this game that different ports are iterating on. So, there is a 16-bit Addams Family game that's a lot like a Super Mario game, and that came out for the Super Nintendo, the Genesis, the Amiga, and the Atari ST. So, there's an 8-bit Addams Family game, and that is a weird 8-bit microcomputer style game that's, you know, part bad platformer, part bad adventure game that came out for the NES, the Game Gear, the Master System, the Spectrum, the Commodore 64, and the Amstrad. There are also two other versions of this game that are completely unique. There's a Game Boy version that is all about a very weird Gomez sprite running around and throwing daggers. And finally, and we're going to spend a lot of time on this because it's so weird, there's a TurboGrafx CD version that I think was the first Addams Family game to market that is so obscure, even the Wikipedia page about all the Addams games does not even list it. This is the game where you play as not as an Addams Family member, but as their lawyer. And it's
insane.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bold decision.
I had never heard of that before until this the podcast research you did, Bob. That is insane to me that happened.
It's one of the weirdest adaptations I've ever seen video game wise. Mm-hmm. You know, just playing as not even the main villain of the movie, but as a side villain.
What an odd choice of how to have your own, like, who pitches that as a game people want to play? I don't understand that.
I have theories, and I think they check out, so we'll talk about them soon. So one weird thing, and this is related to my theories, by the way, one weird thing about these games is that for the most part, Raul Julia's likeness is not in them. My theory is he must have asked for more money when it comes to Lexus rights, or he was the only one who asked for money. Because in these games, the little guy on screen is not Raul Julia from the 1991 movie. It is like a caricature of John Astin from the 60s series, which nobody has ever talked about, and I want to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, he seems close, you know, in a lot of those. It seems close enough to how John Astin looks that it's like, but just with like 5% Raul Julia put in there, that they can just say like, oh, it's you know, basically the same. It's or it's its own unique thing instead. Yeah.
Yeah. These sprites usually have a big John Astin-y grin on their face, which the Raul Julia character in his performance, he doesn't do that.
Yeah, that's not. He crafted his own performance. I was looking up on the real quick here that. Julia apparently does appear in the Street Fighter, the movie, the game, but only in archival footage. He obviously was not doing motion capture for the game, like Jean-Claude Van Damme and Kylie Minogue did.
So maybe his estate took over for that. Who knows?
Yeah,
by that
I can
time.
See that, yeah.
But yeah, all of these games, almost all of these games are developed by a familiar name if you know about bad games, bad licensed games. It's Ocean Software.
Ooh.
Yeah, nobody likes them. I don't know. Maybe I feel like Stuart Jip needs to be on this podcast because he is from the UK. I think he would agree, though, and he'll probably comment on this. Ocean games are bad. They only lasted until 1998. They were established in 1983, and they got a lot of huge licenses, so I'm surprised they didn't stay around for that long, but maybe that was the reason why. They paid a lot for these licenses. They didn't always deliver.
You know, in 98, that's when, like, Disney Interactive and Warner Interactive, like, it was getting a lot more internal. And plus, like, you know, by 98, like, Ubisoft started getting into it. Was a bigger publishing deal thing to make the movie games, and maybe, too, by 98, that people could tell that the games were too bad by then. Like, that's, if you remember, by the next console generation, everybody was selling movie games like, no, they're not shitty anymore. Look, every actor's in them.
This one's actually good, we swear.
Yeah,
I mean, even by 97, it was like, no, GoldenEye is good. Don't think about it as a licensed game. It's actually a good game. Todd, any thoughts about the world of these games before we start talking about them?
Well, I think it's kind of very strange that but these games, and even Fester's Quest, they kind of restrict you to playing as just one character, which I think is common in a lot of the Addams Family games. It's always a little puzzling because Addams Family is such an ensemble thing. You know, you have Gomez, he's kind of the main character, but if you picked up a game, you'd probably want to play as Lurch, Fester, Cousin It. And I'm surprised that of all the, you know, the platformers they made, nobody had the idea of saying, hey, let's do a Super Mario Brothers 2 where you can play as Morticia and Fester and maybe Thing, and there'll be like places in the house that only Thing can get to or something like that.
That's a really good idea.
Kind of thing that jumped out at me.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I think it's because they didn't care, and they had 12 of these to make, and they wanted to make as much money off of what was probably an expensive license, but who knows? Maybe they got it for cheap because nobody knew if this movie would be big or not.
Well, you know, like, if you're designing a Ninja Turtles game, every turtle is essentially the same, at least, like, sprite size, and it's just really about the reach of their weapon. But if you're designing a Gomez, that's not really how Morticia is going to play or Lurch is going to play. And I mean, if you're going to design more than one lead in it, then Ocean's not getting this out in time for release.
No,
you know? Exactly.
No, yeah. Most of them came out like in winter of 92. So right after the game, like the prelude to the VHS release, it was like the perfect time. So right after the movie, sorry.
Back when, it's something you ought to remind yourself, like, in your childhood, DVDs didn't exist. VHS tapes would come out by the Christmas after. Like,
yes.
They would be that spaced out, and it would be an event. Like, oh boy, Batman finally on VHS. Yours to own on VHS.
Yeah, I'm guessing Addams Family movie, November of 91 was the release, and like Christmas of 92 was the VHS release for that.
That would line up with all these video games also. Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about the first game on our list. Fester's Quest still counts, by the way, but we already talked about it. But this is the first game on our new list, and that is the 16-bit version of the Addams Family. Let's talk about the SNES version, because it's identical to the Genesis version. It's the most tolerable of all of these, I will say. It feels inspired by Mario World, although made much less artfully, and it takes the form of a fairly non-linear platformer with lots of secrets and a handful of power-ups. So it's basically, in idea, it's kind of cool because it's like you have all of these choice of levels, kind of like Mega Man, where you go in the Addams house, there's all these doors, there's a level behind each one, you got to rescue all the family members, and Gomez controls like Mario, again, worse hit detection, he's got a power up where he can throw fireballs for a little bit, they're marbles, I guess, I don't know what they are, he's got like a little sword he can use as a power up, and like a fez he can fly around with, and I mean, it's as good, it's like, it's above average for what the licensed games were at this time, but it's still not super fun, but it's, I will say, at best tolerable, like a tolerable platforming experience.
Right, it feels a lot like, it's very typical of the European-made platformers of that area, kind of like James Pond and other things like that, where the hit detection's just a little bit not quite there, but it's, for what it is, it's not too bad. I do like that they did that whole nonlinear approach and things like that. And one thing that kind of strikes me as weird is the enemy choices. It ranges from, you know, actual monsters to just little tiny rabbits and stuff like that. So it made me wonder if they had started off as a different game with, that they just sort of dropped the Addams Family into.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, you get all of your stock, like here's the fire level, here's the ice level, and they, these enemies could be anything out of any of the fire levels and ice levels of, you know, the video game world.
But I mean, it's a smart idea to start with the idea, have the cavernous, like endless house of the Addams Family, and that's what you explore, and it anything could fit inside of there because it's just so crazy. Like, mm-hmm. like that's smart. And also, you know what? John asked it at least. Short guy with a mustache, that's Mario, you know? That,
yeah.
It makes sense.
He was the original Mario, and he dressed better, too.
He could have, if in the 60s they had wanted to make a Mario movie, he could have been the star of it, for sure.
Not a lot going on with this game. Again, it's like the most stock platformer ever, and I like that it's not ambitious, because mm-hmm. it's just like, well, we know what kids like. This is, they like jumping around on things. They like lots of levels with variety, and that's it. Just not executed very well because it's a licensed game and they don't really have to try. And it's of the British game design sense, which I have never liked because I grew up with a different design sense for the platformer and not necessarily what they're doing here.
Right. And at least you don't have to push up to jump like you do in some British platforms.
Yeah, they figured that out by 92.
And two, by 92, they're at least ripping off Super Mario World, and they're not stuck in like Super Mario Brothers or crappy British platformers as much. At least they recognize Super Mario World, and also it does have kind of a more of a Sonic style invincibility power up. I watching the long play of the thing that spins around it too.
Also, like in Sonic, it has a shoes power up that makes you faster, but that just makes you easier to be killed.
Yeah,
so it doesn't make any sense to me. I never liked the Sonic shoes.
I mean, just like in Sonic, it makes it easier to die as you move faster.
But yeah, that is it for the SNES and the 16-bit iterations of this. Let's talk about the 8-bit ones because they are much worse, but the ideas are much more interesting. So this game, I'm talking about the NES version because that's the one I played. It's a real big mix of complete amateurishness, but also surprising ambition, because it's this very specific to the UK genre that I've not seen American games ever do, where it's a mix of both a platformer and an adventure game, but neither one is a good version of either one of those genres. Like, we just covered Garfield games, and a lot of them are from the UK, and like two of them were that, I think, where it's like, you're Garfield, you got platforming stuff to do, but also you have an inventory and you have to use items at a certain time. It's just very awkward.
I guess it's just meant to make it last longer and waste more time than a straightforward just run to the end of the level thing. Yeah.
Now, the one thing I remembered about the NES version, it was pretty much one of the only games that I recalled GamePro really ripping into. Now, GamePro had a reputation for not really doing critical reviews of games, but for some reason, they decided to go in hard on this Addams Family game. They trashed it. They were pining for the days of Fester's Quest, and they gave it their lowest rating, the little purple sleepy face.
Wow. Yeah. I was going to say GamePro's lowest rating, 3.5 out of 5. Only slightly awesome.
Yes, but that's what I remembered about it. I guess they didn't really go over too well with that. But I was surprised to find out that it was actually different from the Super Nintendo game, because back then you would get games that were kind of very similar on the NES and the Super NES.
Yeah, this
especially from licensed properties.
The 8-bit versions of this were a platform adventure game hybrid. Not a very good one, but as a kid, I found this game like very interesting because I love Maniac Mansion. I played it like over and over again. I love the idea, which was fairly new at the time, of like levels that were representational in a way that, you know, I'm in a house, there are different rooms in the house, I can go in all the rooms. It's not like here's World 1-1, here's 1-2, they're all different themes. It's like it's a semi-realistic space, as realistic as the Addams Mansion can get. Mm-hmm. And that's what's cool about this game, is that you can explore the mansion as if it were a real place. You can go into doors, you can look into like, here's Wednesday's room, here's Pugsley's room, here's Fester's room. But unfortunately, it's a very hard game because you have to do things in a certain order. What you have to do is very cryptic, and it controls like absolute trash.
Yeah, I mean, checking out the long play of seeing some of the platformer areas, like it looked like uglier and cheaper than, you know, a bad Mega Man level. And then there was one bit that I was like, oh, come now, which was like just this area. You walk under a bunch of, you know, jagged teeth, and they just with you have no chance on first try of knowing which one of those jagged teeth are going to fall. You have no chance of like reacting at the last second, like, oh no, it was just a prank to pull on you. And then the next time you go there, you'll have to remember, like, right, this tooth falls. Like, it's one of those many things where you watch it like, oh, if you had save states, this wouldn't be a challenge.
It would still be annoying, though.
But it would be very annoying.
I was playing this with save states recently, and I was like, yeah, I'm getting impatient with these things.
Yeah, no, I think this definitely, I probably played this out of same with the love of the movie. I don't... When I saw this one, I was like, this feels familiar to me. I don't think I touched the Super NES one in 92, but this one, I was starting to get angry all over again watching.
It upsets me because there are like really cool ideas, because we never got an Adam's Family Adventure game, and that feels like that's the perfect format for this idea. But yeah, it's just very amateurish. For a 1991 game, it looks like it's from 1986 or something. It's just very, very ugly. The Gomez sprite is just awkward and just very amateurish and doesn't move very well. And there's a big problem with that when you're hit by an enemy, there's no period of invulnerability after it hits you. So like, if an enemy touches you, you keep losing health until you get away from it. And so like, if a projectile hits you, for every frame that it's like passing through you, you lose health.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
This is 1992. That should not be the rules. Like, people should know that the standards or expectations, at least for, again, a children's like platformer.
Yeah. Like when Mario got hit in 1985, you flash.
Yeah.
And then you're invincible for a few seconds until you revert back to small Mario. That was 6 years before this game.
I mean,
the standard was there.
This is post Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, yeah. The kids are not accepting worse than that at this point.
And one last thing about this game is that we were robbed of a much better Gomez sprite that was present in previews of this game and screenshots, in that the original sprite of this game was not this tall, awkward, weird thing you control, but a little chibi Gomez. It looked like something out of a Japanese game, even though this is made by Ocean. So they failed by not including that original sprite. It is so adorable.
He is so cute. I want, like, his giant head and big eyes. Like, yeah, instead, the other one is just so square. Like, that's also, I like that sprite, the OG sprite Gomez, much rounder and adorable. Yeah, just go all the way. If you're going to make him cute, like, that sprite, despite having less tech behind it than a 16-bit system, it looks way cuter than the cute one that's in the Super NES version.
Definitely, like, way more stylized, way more cartoony.
Now, why do you think they would have changed it? Did it just not match what they wanted to reflect the movie, or...?
Maybe they were thinking, this looks too much like John Astin. We want people to think, like, could this be Raul Julia? Because the face is just so, like, you know, there's not a lot of detail in the face that they eventually use. So if you squint and if you got a CRT, you could be like, well, that could be an Astin. It could be a Julia. It's whatever I'm feeling today. Not a whole lot to talk about this game. It's, like I said, the weird adventure platformer hybrid with cool ideas. Like, watch a long play to let you know what you have to do to actually go through this game. You have to do certain things in the right order. It looks like a big pain in the ass, but other bad things I want to mention, there's like four songs in this game, and for the most part, you listen to a very bad version of the Addams Family theme throughout the entire game, which it's 90, again, it's 1991. There's at least like 10 songs in a video game by this point.
Yeah, it reminds me of when we just did a replay of Bart versus the Space Mutants. It's like, it's just the theme over and over again of the Simpsons theme, which it's actually a better rendition than the Addams Family rendition that's in that game, but it's still something you don't want to hear in a loop either.
And most of these adaptations kind of follow the plot of the movie, or at least there's hints of it. In this one, it's very odd in that usually in these games, Morticia is kidnapped, which kind of happens at the end of the original movie. But in this version of the game, you fight both Fester, which, sure, you know, he's an imposter, you fight him, but then you fight a, like, imposter Gomez as well, and that's the last boss of the game, which they're just making up their own movie at this point at Ocean, so I don't know what was going on there.
Well, maybe it was like, you know, the mirror match at the end of a fighting game or something, you know, yeah, it was ahead of its time.
It's like the end of Double Dragon or Super Dodgeball, where it's like, well, this is the true evil, it's you, look in the mirror.
Exactly.
But yeah, that is the 8-bit Addams Family game. Please let us know if you have experiences with these, because I played most of these growing up, except for the next one, which is the most interesting one. So, once again, it's called the Addams Family, and it's for the TurboGrafx-CD, released in 1991. So, developed by ICOM Simulations. What they did, they made some very important and very cool games. They made the MacVenture game, so things like Shadowgate, Deja Vu, and The Uninvited. Sort of patented, before LucasArts, the verb-based adventure game, where you point and click around on the screen. They were the first of the scene when it came to that.
Yeah, that's cool, man. And here they are in just a TurboGrafx platformer.
Yes. So they went from that to saying, you know what, we're really good at making adventure games. We kind of pioneered this kind of style. Let's only make bad platformers until we run out of business. And that's what they did, because this is one of their first ones they made.
I guess maybe they thought licensing was where it was at. I don't know. That's crazy.
I guess so. They were a big developer for NEC that developed the TurboGrafx.
Of course. Yeah, I guess if you're in the NEC, they're going to shove you money for some exclusives, but it sounds like that marginalized them to the extent that they had nowhere else to go after the TurboGrafx fucked up.
And this is, if I would have got this game as a kid, I would have been very disappointed. Todd, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to add, now this game only came out for the TurboGrafx, right? It wasn't a port of a PC game or anything like that.
To the TurboGrafx CD platform.
Right, which is surprising, too, because the TurboGrafx tended to, you know, often get stuck with table scraps or no game, or even miss out on trends at all. Like, you know, with the Street Fighter, Street 2, they didn't even release the TurboGrafx version of that in North America. So I was surprised that this was the first Addams Family game that came out, because somebody had to be pretty on the ball to get that licensed and out in time for, it was 1991?
Yeah, it said, I looked everywhere, I couldn't find a specific date, but it's the one that came out in 1991, the one of these. Everything else is 92 or later, except for Fester's Quest, of course.
All right, well, that was surprising. And, of course, like you said, it's surprising that you play as one of the bad guys, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, let's talk about that. This is so weird. This is the one I want to talk about the most. It's just a bizarre game. So, in this game, you play as, yes, we've all been waiting for it, I want to play as Tully Alford. I'm begging my mom, when are they going to make me a Tully Alford game? You got to write to Nintendo. Well, guess what? It can only happen on the TurboGrafx, because you play as Dan Hedaya in the movie. Character actor Dan Hedaya has his own video game, and he's the star.
It has to be the only video game where you play as him. Like, I can't imagine there's any other time. And yeah, he was one of those actors who you just go like, oh, it's that guy. Like, look at that, there he is, the guy from, I mean, I guess, what was he most famous as Carla's husband on Cheers, her first husband.
Yeah, and he was Cher's dad in Clueless, I believe.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I guess that's, but of course, that would be like if they made a Clueless video game where you play as Claire's dad, yes. Cher's dad, not as Cher.
Yeah. This is just as weird because, in case you don't remember the movie, one of the first scenes of the Addams interacting with a normal person is him, and he's their lawyer, and he goes in with this loan shark and her son who looks like Faster to steal from them. So he is one of the lesser villains of the movie.
Not even the lead villain.
Yeah. And the plot is different, and we'll play a clip of what the plot is soon, but there are some similarities between this game and the movie, in that Fester is seemingly still an imposter in the game, and you actually fight him a few times until he regains his memory, as he does at the end of the 1991 movie. And I want to talk more about likeness rights, which is why you all are listening to this podcast. So, Dan Hedaya is the only major cast member fully depicted via in-game photographs, like production stills of the movie. It's really just him, and then at the end of the game, there are two photographs of, like, the weird Addams relatives, and that's it.
Wow. Huh.
So I think they paid for likeness rights of three actors to make this game. They pay for the license of the movie and for the rights to use Dan Hedaya's likeness.
I would bet it was pretty gettable at that time.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, I would bet he didn't understand video game licensing rights and just was like, $10,000? Well, sure, whatever. That's just a spurious number, but that doesn't.
I don't even think it was that much money.
Yeah, what am I saying? But when I clicked on the long play you shared with us, I didn't know that this was the lawyer game.
Yes.
So when
it's the original Ace Attorney.
So when I skipped ahead to just see some of the combat, I was like, man, that's an ugly looking Gomez. Why does Gomez look that way? And then it hit me like, what? No, this is the lawyer.
Yes, you play as Tully Alford, and you have a umbrella that fires projectiles, and you're infiltrating the Adams Mansion. And actually, Henry, can you play our first clip in which Gomez, this is supposed to be Gomez, by the way, he explains the premise of the game to the man playing Tully. Dan Hedaya is not doing the voice of Tully in this, by the way.
They couldn't even, oh man, I guess, yes, this has audio clips because it's a CD game, I'm guessing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, here, I'll play the clip.
Tully, my boy, you seem a bit stressed these days. I'd hate to think my humble family is the cause for your duress, but I have an idea which I think you might like. If you're able to successfully find the family vault, you may take as much money as you wish. There is one catch. The family and I shall all be at home waiting patiently to, well, let's just say to make your task a bit more difficult than one might have originally imagined.
Hmm. I mean, how hard could it be to find that silly vault anyway? And what could they possibly do to me that they haven't tried before? By Gomez, I'll do it!
So there you have it. That's the premise of the game. They just was like, the movie would be better if they knew Tully was trying to rip them off, but they welcomed it, and they challenged him, and they fought them in many different battles.
That's, okay, that makes so little sense. I mean, first, the acting quality, that sounds like people who worked on the game, like just office employees, like, well, I can sort of do an accent, like, yeah, and that Gomez is like nothing. It's like
he sounds like Santa Claus.
Oh, Tully, I don't think there'll be Christmas this year.
Todd, any thoughts on the premise of this bizarre game?
So they don't really reposition him as a hero so much as he's more like a, I don't even know what to call it. It's, do you think that they basically started off with a completely generic character infiltrating the Addams family and basically realized that they had to connect it to the movie somehow?
That's a good point. Yeah, it's I feel like someone should have stopped them and told the developers, yeah, no, you want to be the Addams family. You don't want to fight them in boss battles.
Nobody wants to fight the Addams family. I mean that saves them the trouble of designing bosses, I suppose. Like, it's economical in that way, but also when you think about it, you know, wouldn't it make more sense you're playing as Fester before he gets his memory back and he's fighting the family? And then especially because so many times when he like is trying to kill the family members, they just go like, oh, you want to fight? Oh, I love this. Oh, boy. Oh, you brought him. You brought poison. That's great. I love that.
That's a better idea, Henry, because in the game, you run into Fester and he's seemingly the imposter also going after the gold. It's like, you stay away from that gold. It's mine.
What?
And then he comes to his senses when you fight him in a boss battle.
That doesn't make. Yeah, that's terrible. Yeah. Like, if you already got him in there, obviously the likeness rights things, it sounds like they really, it must have just hinged on, well, technically you want to play as a guy who's the real guy or you see a picture of him, but if everybody else is a fake anyway, I'd rather play as a fake Fester than a real Tully Alford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to get too far ahead, but he actually becomes a monster himself in the game.
Yes, I'm glad you pointed that out because it's so weird in that I'm like, okay, I know the weirder part of this game is that you turn into a monster. What are your powers? Like, what does being a monster turn you into? Halfway through the game, after you beat Pugsley, you get a potion and you're automatically turned into a monster. All it does is give you another bar of health. It just makes you, gives you more health, and that's it. Your attacks are all the same. You're still shooting things out of an umbrella.
You know, at least in Altered Beast, you get better attacks, you know.
But yeah, it's...
No, he's kind of a werewolf. Is that what he's supposed to be?
I guess so. But yeah, they really went off on like their own tangent as they're writing their own like fan fiction almost, or like being script doctors for this movie.
But it feels like they forgot that, like, no, the Munsters have a werewolf. Like, a werewolf is too pedestrian for the Addams family. Like, that's not, you know... The Addams Family is really about a circus freak show mentality, not monster makeup mentality or transformations, you know?
Regarding the fanfic thing, it just feels like somebody thought, oh, here's my original Addams Family character. He's a werewolf, because they don't have one of those yet. And someone was like, no, we have to link it to the movie.
Someone worked their OC into this game.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's what you expect. It's very awkward. It's like a 30-minute long game. You're exploring the Addams Family mansion. You're getting keys. You're opening doors. You're fighting them all in boss fights. Throughout the game, like a narrator is telling you things about the story over production stills of the movie. No other actor outside of Dan Hedaya and the two other, like, Adam's relatives are seen or depicted at all. Like, I think you see them in shadows, but, I mean, you see sprites of Gomez and Morticia and Fester and stuff, but you don't actually see photos of the actors. And I have a clip of the ending that tells you what happens to Tully after his grand adventure when he wins all the gold.
Ah, this is the life. I knew one day I'd have everything I'd ever dreamed of. Those nutty Adams almost killed me. But Tally Alford's the victor this time. And from now on, no more Adams family for me. Just me, this island, and all the Mai Tais one man can drink. Oh, no! It's you! See, I told you the old boy would be thrilled to see us. And look, he's all ready to play. Wait, Tully, you forgot your saber. Tully, Tully! And so it was. And almost everyone lived happily ever after.
The Addams Family.
Terrible editing on that song.
Wow.
I have edited 10,000 hours worth of audio. They couldn't find a way to link the beginning of the song to the end, so there's like there, and then it goes the Addams Family. So yeah, bad,
terrible,
bad all around.
All bad, man. Also, it's like, yeah, the end of the game, like this, you're the boss who, you're like, you're the villain of it who then didn't get away with it. Like, that's the, I guess that's at least like a silly ending, like an episode of the show would be like, well, at least I'll never, now that it's like a million Looney Tunes of just like, well, I might be in prison, but at least I'll never see that guy again. Like, Bugs Bunny, what? Could be.
It was very much like a Looney Tunes style ending.
Yeah, but I also just, again, that voice voice actor's like, well, I got all the Mai Tais I can drink.
Tully, old boy, I'm Gomez Adams.
He's like Sala from Indiana Jones or something.
Yes. Where was that? An actual sword fight. How about you actually have a sword fight, not just say like, oh, I brought a saber with me. We can have a sword fight.
He fights Gomez with a sword or a few times.
Sure.
So there you have it.
All right. But man, that is still insane to me. The Dan Hedaya, or like that he would be the star of a video game that ever happened, and that it was on this TurboGrafx CD of all places.
Yep. And it's because they wanted to make it as cheap as possible, and all those actors cost money.
Yes, and that's really downhill from when NEC wasn't always quite that desperate for to save money. I mean, back when they did East Book 1 and 2, they hired some professional voice actors like Michael Bell for that, but wow, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know what they did here.
It does sound like it's just one guy. When you hear Gomez and Fester and Tully and the narrator, it feels like this is just the one radio guy that had come in for half an hour.
Well, no, I mean, all their budget went to just an official photograph of Dan Hedaya. Yeah.
They got their Dan Hedaya NFT. That's what they paid so much money for. Let's talk about the only really good game here, and it's not a video game. You know what? We rarely talk about pinball, and I want to do a pinball episode, but this is the best pinball game ever. It's the Addams Family Pinball, and you know what? It was available digitally for a very short time, and I'm kicking myself that I never got it. So there's this thing called Pinball Arcade, and it's like official digital recreations of classic pinball tables. So from February of 2015 to June of 2018, you could download the Addams Family table because this company had a Kickstarter that raised over $10,000 for just the likeness rights of this game, but they still could not afford Christopher Lloyd.
Wow,
yes.
Man. I mean, you know, Christopher Lloyd should be protective of his likeness. You know, it is his face. He shouldn't just give it away. But that's it's too bad they had to change his face off of the old pinball machine. But man, that pinball machine was like everywhere in our childhood.
Yeah, I have some citations. I don't know how reliable they are, but everybody was agreeing on this. It was the best-selling pinball machine of all time, or rather is, with 20,270 units sold and then 1,000 gold units made to celebrate its high sales. So it's funny to think about how relatively small the circulation is for the biggest pinball game of all time, just like 21,000 units.
Right. If that were a video game, I don't think you could even get a... It wouldn't even sell its first printing or something, so that puts it in perspective.
Now, I have a lot of experience with this table. Do either of you have experience with the Addams Family pinball game?
I've played it and because it's shown up so many places, like laundromats and airport arcades and things like that, and it's really an eye-catcher.
Yeah, it was just so consistent around in my life at, like, pizza parlors or just, you know, the pinball alley that there would be in an arcade of, like, oh, against the wall, here's the pinball machines, you know, and as you got older, like, it would, you could still count on it being most places. If most places had a pinball machine, it would either be that or Terminator 2 I could consistently count on. And yeah, a few years ago, I went to a pinball museum in Las Vegas, Nevada, which was really had a lot of it was incredibly stripped down. It was just like, you know, it's a strip mall. But the collection was incredible. And I played my fill of Addams Family that day. And I wish I had gone into I had done Galloping Ghost this Labor Day, but only the arcade games. One, I didn't go to their separate building for pinball, which I really wish I had. But yeah, it's I am pretty experienced with it. Pinball, I'll play for about 20 minutes once a year or maybe every 2 years. I've never been that big into it, I'll admit.
There's the Pacific Pinball Museum in Alameda, actually, where you pay a certain amount of money and you get in for, you know, as much as you can handle. It turns out that's about 90 minutes. That's the most pinball anyone can handle in a day for that, you know, that all-you-can-eat price.
All those clackers. Yeah, so much clacking.
But I can't really articulate what makes a pinball game good. I don't have a sense of, like, what is pinball game design more as much as I do video game design. But everything just comes together with this machine. Like, the theming is perfect. The sound effects are perfect. The sound clips are perfect. Just the attractive arts on the marquee or whatever you want to call that. And it just is, I am so attracted to it. Every time I see it, I have to play it. And I remember playing it as a kid when it was new. It was the first arcade game that I can remember that cost 50 whole cents, not a quarter. But I was like, wow, arcade games cost 50 cents now? The world has changed. It's 1992. Things are different now.
I'm just so sad that it's not, that it was only so temporarily available as DLC, and that took a whole Kickstarter to make it happen too.
Yes, I'm kicking myself once again. This is such a great pinball game though, and you know, we've had a pandemic for the past 2 years. I don't know if you noticed, it's been pretty bad. And I used to go all over the place to these retro gaming conventions, especially Portland, and I would go to Ground Control, and I would go to Quarter World. Ground Control has an Addams Family machine, and I would play it every time, at least 3 or 4 times. So I desperately miss playing this game. It was a yearly tradition for me to play it at least once in the month of October.
I hope for your sake next October you can finally return to Portland for that.
I want to do a pinball episode of Retronauts, and it's going to happen at some point. I need like experts on our guest staff, because you know, I just like playing pinball. I don't know about like how it's made or what design means. Any other final thoughts on this game before we move on? I just think it's great. Play it if you find it. It's so good. And you know, as much as you talk about Raul Julia likeness rights, he's in the game. Raul Julia recorded new voice lines for the game. Raul Julia doesn't say multi-ball in the movie.
You know, maybe it's pinball was flush with money then, and they could pay for it. Or perhaps Raul Julia was like, oh, well, pinball, now that is an adult's game. That's that I respect, not like these video games.
That's the game of gentlemen, yes. Yeah. Sport of kings.
Yes. And it's used for gambling often, but it's illegal. So Addams Family Pinball, like the standout game in this list. Let's get on to the last two, which are bad, and we'll start with Addams Family Pugsley's Scavenger Hunt, 1993. I hate Pugsley. The downside of the 2019 movie is they try to make it about Pugsley in a way, and I'm like, Pugsley sucks. This actor's not very good as him. I like how he is in the movie in that he is just a very hapless victim of Wednesday who's just grinning through all the punishment. That's as much characterization as I need from Pugsley. I don't need a Pugsley arc, okay?
I guess if I'm a screenwriter and trying to say, well, I've been assigned to Addams Family, who's the unexplored character I can finally do something with? I suppose Pugsley is that, because he's just so uninteresting. Like, his character is just like a gross little fat kid, like a mean like a mean fat kid who just like stares at you. Like,
the stripes aren't thinning either.
Yeah, no, I know. It's no, I feel bad for the heavier actor Childs who had to do that. It's like, it. I was just rewatching Sopranos, which AJ Soprano is the Pugsley of the Sopranos family, and but that actor, after two seasons, I think as a kid, he was getting tired of being the fat kid on the show, so he got in really good shape, and I feel for the kids that had to play them in both the 60s and the 90s. But
I really
Pugsley
wonder
sucks ass
how many you know, budding young chubby actors are like, they got to make an Addams Family movie. I am Pugsley. I can't age out of this role.
I've only got two more years of perfect Pugsley shape here. Yeah.
But yeah, so this is Pugsley Scavenger Hunt, and we could talk about the different versions of the game. So there's an SNES game, there's a Game Boy game, and NES game. The 8-bit games are like unfinished garbage. They are basically stealing the level designs of the 16-bit Addams Family game, the first one.
Oh, Jesus.
And the NES game does not even have music.
That
in a 1993 video game, no music. Like, you're just playing through levels in silence.
That's evil. That's
so, yeah, the NES game, and I think the Game Boy game too, are just reskinned versions of the 16-bit SNES Addams Family game. Pugsley Scavenger for the SNES is a unique game that is very not great, but for some reason it got a Nintendo Power cover, and I think Ocean and Nintendo Power money was changing hands.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, they saw that Fester's Quest had a cover, and that helped him sell so much. So here,
Henry,
you go.
I must correct you. Fester's Quest never got a cover.
Oh, I thought it did.
Yes. Okay, you could be thinking of seeing this little creep.
I must have. I thought, like, when I saw this cover, I was like, God, it's just, it reads so flat too. Like, they really did just give them, I mean, they didn't, it doesn't look like they drew an original thing. It just looks like it came out of like the press kit
yeah.
for the cartoon series it's based on. And it just reads so flat and ugly.
It was like the clip art they gave them. I'm sorry, Todd, go ahead.
I remember Fester's Quest did have a poster in Nintendo Power, but
that could be what you're thinking of.
All right. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
It deserved a cover more than this. I like your rewriting history, Henry, because this got the cover that didn't. So, in case you don't know, based on the popularity of the 1991 movie, there was a ABC Saturday morning cartoon. It ran for two seasons, 21 episodes from 92 to 93. Almost entirely unknown today, but it was nominated for three daytime Emmys and won one of them.
You know, I watched a teeny bit of it on YouTube, the original that animated series, and I'll give them credit for, they decided the character model should look as close to the Addams comics as they could get while still, you know, being a cheap looking cartoon. And they bothered to get like John Astin to play Gomez. So I believe by that time Jackie Coogan was dead. So
yeah, I think he died in like 88 or 84 or something like that.
Yeah, 84, I think.
Yeah, I didn't really watch the cartoon. I think I gave it a shot, but at this point, kids' cartoons are becoming like very sophisticated, and this was probably not crap, but it wasn't as clever as, you know, Tiny Toons your Nicktoons or whatever, so I didn't really watch it. But yeah, it's based on this license, and there's not a lot to talk about because it is kind of like a sequel to the 16-bit Addams Family games, but made much more difficult. Enemies are swarming the screen. Pugsley has like no offensive vocabulary. Like, he can jump on enemies and kind of do like a weak little stomp in front of them. You got to see the stomp he does. He's like, he's stepping on a bug. No enemy is getting hurt by this. And that's it. And it's very easy to die. And it's just a lot of very, you know, European platformer style levels that are just really big, not really artfully made. And I mean, it looks okay. They really carry forward the look of the cartoon series, but it's just an odd game. I guess they thought, like, little boys play games, let's have the game starring the little boy character.
I that was my big assumption there, because, you know, Wednesday is so much more popular. Everybody loves Wednesday. Everybody loves Christina Ricci in the movie. Nobody remembers anything about Pugsley, the actor who played him.
But, Jimmy Workman?
but then, you know, when you're Ocean and the publisher of the game, you're not going to make a game starring a girl. You're just not. Like, you, your market research will tell you a girl on the cover means boys won't buy it. Like, mm-hmm. that's the lie everybody is telling themselves, that they still tell themselves today, even, about girls on game covers don't sell video games. And that's just, that's why you end up with something as stupid as a Pugsley video game.
Going on a scavenger hunt. Have you played this game, Todd?
A little bit, yeah. And I can see why they basically were limited in what the character could do to attack. I guess because it was a child character, they didn't want him swinging an axe around or throwing knives or doing anything that Gomez or Fester could get away with. So it just feels like a really odd game. I think the first level, you go up the stairs and you're looking at the stage through a crystal ball.
Yeah, one of the levels, I think the way they make it more challenging is, like, some of the levels are the rest of the screen is, like, taken away, and you're playing it through, like, the center of the screen as through Grandmama's crystal ball.
Yeah.
So you're, like, just, your view is limited to the center of the screen only. It's very odd. I mean, it's a cool effect, but it makes the levels just, like, way too hard to play.
Yeah.
Right. And before I forget, I will never forgive this game for taking that Nintendo Power cover away from Cybernator, which was this cool mech shooter from Konami and Messiah that totally deserved a nice cover for Nintendo Power.
Was there an internal battle, Pugsley versus Cybernator?
I'm sure there was a heated debate in the Nintendo Power editor's room.
I mean, Nintendo Power was just promotion for games, and I think, like, what they thought was popular would dictate what was on the cover. And I'm sure they assume, like, people love Addams Family, it's 1993, there's a new movie coming out, let's put Pugsley's game on the cover.
And I mean, now, I would assume literal checks were exchanged too for that. Yes.
Now, I haven't watched much of the cartoon, but was it really Pugsley centric?
Not at all.
Just sort of the game.
I mean, I think they did more with him than the TV show did. I mean, if you watch the TV show, there are not a lot of things going on with Pugsley and Wednesday. It's just like these two little kid actors who are kind of dead eyed and they're kind of saying lines phonetically. The, like, Wednesday from the TV show does not have the same, like, zing that Christina Ricci's Wednesday has. And I think they tried to put that zing into these animated characters, but it's not a Pugsley-focused show from what I've seen.
Right.
Also, Rip Taylor plays Fester.
That's right. Yeah, he's fun. I like him. He's much more the inventor, wacky. Like, he's in a couple clips I watched, it was Fester going like, oh, it's my new invention. She took it. Like, he's more of an inventor than a...
a creep.
A creep, yes.
But yeah, that is the Pugsley Scavenger Hunt, and we're the last game on our list here, and that is Addams Family Values. So, 1995. This is... the property is kind of dead at this point. Nobody really cares anymore.
Because Family Values did not light up the box office like the first movie did.
I don't think it made back its budget.
I believe I had read that too. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, back in this time period, game adaptations really trailed behind the movies they were based on. This is no different. If you think about, like, GoldenEye, I think that was 18 months after the movie. The movie was Holiday 95, and I think the game was Fall 97 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, it was Fall 97. And same with, there was the Superman Returns video game that I think was like over a year after as well, yeah.
So yeah, these would often lag behind. And so what's unfortunate here is that between the release of the movie and the game, the lead actor is dead. Raul Julia dies in 1994. So instead of starring Gomez, it would be weird if you're like, well, now the actor's alive and he's dancing around in the game. I mean, there is a depiction of him in this game, but he is a very side character. So,
well, and when Addams Family is so macabre, like, that's something in Addams Family Values, I had one real bring down of just seeing, like, there's a scene where Gomez, I think, was just being dramatic, but he's like, oh, swing low, sweet chariot, because he feels that he's about to die just out of being so bereft that his brother won't talk to him. But knowing that he's, like, probably very sick at the time he's filming the scene of him saying, oh, I'm going to die, I was like, this is a darker moment than they meant it to be.
It's very, very unfortunate. He is not the star of the game. We're back to Fester. And it's kind of, I consider it a spiritual sequel to Fester's Quest. But it's very, very inspired by A Link to the Past. So, Raul Julia, not on the box. The box cover is very weird. It's a promotional shot of the movie with, like, Lurch holding a toy over the baby carriage.
Right, right,
So it's not the whole family.
Which
either.
Also is a lie that it's, like, just get it. If you're going to get a promotional image, get Fester on it. If you're playing with Fester, like, if I saw that box, I bet I did see that box. In my 95, I knew I wasn't going to play a movie-based game. But if I saw that box, I would think, oh, so I play as the baby in this, or I play as Lurch? Like, that'd be my first thought. Even it makes so much sense to make Fester. He should be the main guy you play as in all of these. Because
yeah.
Especially if you're going to strip away details and cute something up, a round bald head on like a burlap sack is so simple to make a sprite out of.
And
you know?
The second movie has a lot of fun with him being indestructible because his fiance is trying to murder him and he just can't be murdered.
Yeah. That's fucking funny.
Now, is that where they got the idea to give him electricity powers in this game? Because it seems like they took it's based on the movies and not the TV show. So he doesn't have a gun or he doesn't have, you know, anything like that, but so he has like a lightning bolt.
Yeah, like the TV show, maybe it was based on the comic, it infers that Fester can conduct electricity. You know, the TV show had him putting the light bulb in his mouth and it lighting up. In this game, he just fires it out of his hand.
You know, that's the easy, I can see how you make the walk there. You know, in the first movie, it ends with him finally doing the light bulb trick again. And so then they make the next step in values of having him, the first death trap he survives is electrocution in a bathtub, which really is like, well, yeah, of course you can't electrify him. He is electric.
We all know this about Uncle Fester. But yeah, one last thing about Raul Julia in this game, RIP, of course. He's not in the box, but a depiction of him is in the game. When you talk to Gomez on the screen, the little dialogue bubble pops up and it's a digitized image of Raul Julia. So either they figured it out or they didn't bother asking and nobody noticed.
Yeah, I mean, they probably did think, like, what's he going to do? He can't sue us. You can put a dead man in a video game, right?
Or maybe his estate was more forgiving, or they were able to cut a deal and Raul Julia himself was holding out for more.
Could be. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
This is all just my theory, by the way. So, but it's just, I'm keeping track of when he does appear. So yeah, it is a super inspired by Link to the Past video game. And you know what? It's still not that great, but I will give them credit for not just making another bad platformer, because it takes a lot more work to make a Link to the Past ripoff than a Mario ripoff. So I will give them that, even though this game has a lot of flaws. It's very pretty. The music is great, but it's very difficult, as you would expect from an Ocean style licensed game.
At least they can. I mean, I'm impressed that Ocean at least picked a better game to rip off than just like Dizzy. You know?
Yes, exactly. Todd, any experience with Addams Family Values, the Fester's Quest spiritual sequel?
Right. Well, it does have a few things in common, like the way that if you get hit, it takes away your energy, and your lightning attack gets weaker, which seems like a really strange way of punishing somebody who's bad at playing the game. But that's kind of the same thing that Fester's Quest and Blaster Master do. All the Blaster Master games have that as a mechanic. And one thing I was interested in is I did not play all the way to the end of this, so I don't know if the last boss is a Joan Cusack or not, but he's basically trying to rescue the baby in this movie.
That's right.
In this game.
That's right. I think when you get to Joan Cusack, you fight a boss and you get to Joan Cusack and then the floor drops off under her and she dies. So there's a boss before her. And they play a lot with the canon of this movie where it's like the first thing you encounter is like, well, Debbie's in control of the plants now. You gotta fight the plants. It's like, well, that would have been cool in the movie, but it didn't happen.
He never even fights her. He always, even when after the third attempt, he's like, but I love you. What's going on, sweetness?
Yeah, so
it is true to the movie in that regard.
There should have been multiple Debbie boss fights in this, but who knows why they did it this way. But yeah, it feels like someone just had an idea for a Link to the Past style action game, and they just jammed Fester in here because nothing else really is Addams Family related. It's just a bunch of spooky levels, but it's too hard, and enemies can hit you when you're behind objects, and your lightning bolt attack comes out of only one side of your body, so it's not like the center of your body. Like when Link swings his sword, even though it's kind of on one side, the hitbox is in front of him, right?
Yeah.
In this game, the hitbox is always on the right side, so it's just very awkward to play.
I honestly, I'm surprised they put all that effort into it too, because once the box office results for Family Values came back, I feel like they should have just said, let's just skip this.
Yeah.
If nobody saw it in the theater, kids aren't going to buy the video game or rent the video game either. So the fact that they put it out makes me surprised.
I mean, the world of games was changing, but it shows you the difference between the first movie and Values, and that Addams Family won 12 games. Addams Family Values, 2 games, and they're both the same game.
The same, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's it for Addams Family Values. And you know what? That's kind of it for that era of Addams Family and the related projects, because that was the mini renaissance. We're kind of, I hope we're in one now. I hope it continues because I want people to be into the show and the characters and stuff. But for the sake of completeness, I can name a few other things. So there is a 2001 Game Boy Color game based on the new Addams Family that's a point-and-click adventure game with some bad platforming segments. So in the late 90s, when nobody cared anymore, Saban Entertainment, our friends who brought the Power Rangers over here and made live-action Ninja Turtle shows, they said Addams Family is cheap and that's where we come in. So they made a direct-to-video movie called Addams Family Reunion. Tim Curry is Gomez. I've never seen it.
Hey, you know, that's who you cast, I guess. If you're going for cheaper but good, wow. Tim Curry is that. Yeah, but I mean, in 1991, he probably would have been cast as Gomez in some productions.
Yeah,
but
like a stage production.
This had Daryl Hannah as Morticia, wasn't it? Or am I thinking of something else?
Oh, no, that was Daryl Hannah, yeah. So in 97, there was that movie. And then in 99, there was a Saban Entertainment, Canadian-produced television show called The New Addams Family. So between Vacation and the TV show, sorry, between Reunion and the TV show, the new TV show, only Wednesday was the same actor. So all the actors are newer and cheaper and Canadian. And guess what? There are 64 episodes of Addams Family, 64, 66. There are 65 episodes of New Addams Family.
Wow,
yeah.
Man. That you know, Saban knows how to pump this stuff out cheap and fast. This I can see with all their Power Rangers money in the mid-90s, they're like, all right, we're investing in Addams Family and Ninja Turtles, the two biggest movies of 1991.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to get them now.
And so, yeah, there's that Game Boy Color game in 2001. There is the Fester arcade game where the handles vibrate, you hold on to them. I think
and it pretends it electrocutes you, but it doesn't really.
Yeah, I was mad that it didn't actually zap me when I played it for the first time as a teen.
I never played it because I was too scared. I was a little wimp in the arcade.
That game would quickly be taken off the market if it actually did electrocute you to death.
You know, you don't know that as a little kid.
The game came out in 1999.
Well, hey, I was a child at heart.
Okay. And latest news that we have here for Addams Family, this is also topical because there is a new traditional Addams Family console game in 2021, the first one in 20 years. It's the Addams Family : Mansion Mayhem.
I cannot believe a console movie games don't come out on consoles anymore. They're phone games. Like, what's going on here?
There was a phone game in 2019.
Okay.
It was like a gacha game, kind of.
I expect that.
They made a real-ass game for 2021 that came out this fall.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Man. Maybe I'll take a look at this. But just to see that, like, somebody made a movie game for a console, which never happens or for kids' movies anyway.
Yeah, and I will say this does kind of go back to something I didn't see in all the older games. You do get to play as multiple characters. You can play as Gomez, Morticia, Wednesday, and it's got that, like, we can do four players at once. So it's kind of like almost if somebody made an early 90s brawler for the arcades, but with Addams Family, which I'm surprised never happened back then. But this, it doesn't look too bad for what...
Yeah, I'm sure it's not great, but it's just weird to see, like, oh, someone made a real game based on a movie? That doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah. Even for the Marvel stuff, like, people don't make you get a Guardians of the Galaxy video game that looks enough like it but is not tied into it. Like, you don't... video game movie tie-ins that direct don't happen anymore. So that's wild that did. It's quite retro, really.
And yeah, I guess my final thoughts on this are it was a fun time to be a kid reliving through this mini renaissance, and I hope modern kids today are enjoying the new movies and even the older ones because they're still fun. There's nothing weird or problematic in them, at least I don't think so. And yeah, I'm just happy to see that the property can live on. It's not dated. And you can still do things with these characters because ultimately they're just fun to watch because they're all just well-meaning creeps who are they just want to have fun. And, you know, Gomez is such a great character and he is the dad of all dads. We all want a dad like Gomez.
Such a great. Yeah. I mean, in a healthy relationship, doesn't hate his wife like every other comedy character.
That was the spooky premise of the show. Like, what if a husband loved his wife?
And then also, like, he loves his mother-in-law, and they mm-hmm. she lives with them. Yeah, and he has children he sees instead of... I mean, I guess he does smoke to the amount that most men smoked back then, though.
But. When I was watching one of the old TV shows, I forgot that a joke was he lights a cigar and then puts the match in his pocket. Like, he puts out the lit match inside of his shirt pocket.
That's funny. Yeah, that's good.
It's literally a smoking jacket, everyone.
I loved all the children smoking in the in Adam's Family Values. Like, he hands a cigar to Pugsley, and then also he gives the baby a hair of the dog, like the egg in a vodka thing, like up too late partying. Here you go.
Any final thoughts, Henry and Todd? Henry, Adam's Family, your final thoughts on this one?
You know, I hope those movies still do all right, at least that the kids can enjoy Adam's Family. There's always, as the, you know, the world can change, but the Addams Family stays the same, and they can just react to the weird world around them. Like, that they were too weird for the regular normies of the 60s. Then when the 90s comes around, they're too weird, but in a different way for the 90s. And then in these days, they can be weird in a totally different way for our time. But they are always a bunch of weirdos.
And in 91, Cousin Nick came into the movie listening to MC Hammer in his fun car. And in 2019, he drives in listening to Snoop Dogg. And he's played by Snoop Dogg.
What?
Yes, but with a garbled voice, so they just really wasted their money.
Yeah, that's... yeah, why would they do that? That doesn't...
So listen, you can put Snoop Dogg's name on the cover because he's now a lifestyle brand.
That is true. And I guess the last thing I'll say is my favorite joke in the first Addams Family movie is when he calls into Sally Jesse Raphael, because they're just like, they're too weird for even daytime TV. Like, that's why I feel like the Addams Family will always work, because you just find something in this world then that will be like, no, the Addams Family are too weird for even this thing. That's how weird they are.
I really love Unemployed Gomez in that movie. Sorry, I'm just remembering all of the fun moments. Like, and Miss Gilligan? Todd, how about you? Final Addams Family thoughts before we wrap up here.
Well, like you said, it's really an idea that doesn't get old, and you can always expand it and do things new with it, which, and I guess I do miss the days when you could really do an off-the-wall idea like Fester's Quest. But who knows? Maybe they'll do something like it again, where I actually had to go back through the Addams Family episodes and see if aliens ever came into the series before. But at the time, it didn't really seem like that much of a stretch for the Addams Family because, as like Henry says, they're just a weird and loving family, and you can kind of do whatever you want with them and put them into any sort of situation, and you could potentially have a good, good and funny story there.
They are immortal, and they should be. So let me wrap up here, everybody. Thanks again for listening to Retronauts. And if you want to support our show and get all these episodes 1 week at a time and ad-free, please go to patreon.com/retronauts. Sign up for $3 a month to get just that. But if you want to get access to 2 full-length bonus episodes every month, join at the $5 level. You'll get that. We've been doing 2 full-length bonus episodes every month since the beginning of 2020. So now there's like almost 50 exclusive episodes that you have not heard if you're not a patron at patreon.com/retronauts. We do this as our full-time jobs for the most part. So we are fully supported by you, the listener. We appreciate anything you can donate to us, and we'd like to give you something in return. So again, that is patreon.com/retronauts. Let's start with Todd. Todd, anything you want to plug or where people can find you online?
Well, I do this video series with my friend Joel. It's called Unsung Game Creators. You can find us on YouTube under that title. We like to spotlight developers, especially from the older systems that people might not have heard of. And I still do a blog called Kid Fenris at kidfenris.com. And that's where you can find the Fester's Quest interview.
Excellent. And Henry, what about you?
Oh, well, listeners, if you liked hearing me talk about old TV shows and with Bob here, yeah, I think you'll really enjoy our mini podcast we do with the Talking Simpsons Network. Me and Bob go through the entire series of The Simpsons for the Talking Simpsons podcast, where we are about done with season 12 and season 2 redo at this point. And also, we do the What a Cartoon podcast, where twice a month we cover an animated series super in-depth, and we're doing the same for a movie once a month. All of that can be found at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons or at TalkingSimpsonsPodcast.com to check out the free feeds or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG.
And as for me, I've been the host of this episode, Bob Mackey. Find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. But we'll see you again very soon for another new episode of Retronauts. Thanks a lot for listening.
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.